Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning. Over this last few days, this holiday, this Christmas holiday, I received a greeting card from one of our Sangha members from before COVID. She sent me a little letter, a little note, just to let me know what's going on with her. And she's had hip surgery. And along with everything else that's been happening in the world, it's made it difficult for her. And I could sense from reading her letter that she used to really enjoy coming and sitting. And she seemed really disappointed that her life took this turn and she couldn't sit. She seemed to have identified very strongly that practice is sitting. That's unfortunate. Because practice is life, whatever it happens to be. And if it means you can't sit, then you don't sit. You're still practicing. So I'm not suggesting that she's not practicing. I understand her disappointment. It just made me think about how we identify so strongly with things that we do. This tight knot, as though those have to continue in order for us to be all that we are. Wisdom is not this, not that, and not anything else. Equanimity, there's no this and that to hold on to. Ultimately, everything has to be let go of. When the mind is clear like space, you have the freedom. Just this. Our sitting meditation or practice, it's an expedient means. It's a way to do that pause that I talked about last week. This morning in meditation, I thought of one of my old Sangha members from up in Maryland. At the American Zen College. He was the abbot there for a while. And one time we had a cup of tea. I went up to visit him. I think we were at Starbucks and we were talking about meditation. And he said, oh, meditation is easy. At the time, it left a mark on my mind. I didn't pursue it. What do you mean meditation is easy? But I held on to that. What did he mean? Meditation is easy. I thought I knew. After you've been practicing for many years like he has, and I have, sometimes just sitting on the cushion, you instantly get into the habit. You know, that's a very wonderful, samadhi, joyful, peaceful experience. Is it enlightenment? No. So he said, meditation is easy. What is hard then? If meditation is easy, what is hard? You see, we're still talking about this duality, this or that. Either we have it or we don't. Vimalakirti, in teaching one of the bodhisattvas, said that in terms of begging for food and eating food. He said, when you no longer have to have perfection, then you can eat food. When you can sit in the muck with the devils and not be attached, then you can eat food. This non-attachment is this big key that opens this door that isn't there. This gateless gate of awakening. So that we are free in every movement, whether we're moving or not. Stillness, not stillness, it's the same. So things are coming and going. And when we're not moved by them, we don't have topsy-turvy mind bouncing up and down. When that pause is extended, that's nirvana. So how is that different than being angry, frustrated, lazy, incompetent, all the things we assume? You know, practice. Practice is our life. Once we've committed to Bodhi, once we've committed to save all sentient beings, what an enormous task, right? Looked at from one point of view. You know, how do you grasp it? It's ungraspable. As soon as you try to grasp it, you've lost it. You try to hang on to some idea of what being a Buddhist is, you've lost it. I'm really happy to sit with you. I'm really glad that I have my hips still working and I can sit. Sure. But if I couldn't sit, my practice continues. Right up to the last breath. So many of us think that pain is suffering. Where does most of the pain come from? Our minds, our association with this and that. See, here's the thing. You don't say pain is real, and you don't say pain is not real. Not saying we don't experience pain. I've been watching how we've been dealing with this sick cat in our house. And Charlene and I are different, our karmas are different, and we're different people. So we have different approaches. I tend to want to let the cat make its own decisions. That may or may not be the right thing, don't know. Sometimes it might be, sometimes it isn't. Charlene believes persuading the cat to eat is a good thing. And I think she's right, that each of our approaches are working. The cat looks to each of us for this affirming intervention. They're just different styles, but I think they're both an attempt to be present with the cat to help the cat get better. So, fine. But I'm not caught up in my way or the highway, or my way's better, her way is better. This or that. It's coming at it from where you are right now as, you know, Will, as Ross, as Peter, as Dan, this personality and this being at this time with all the history and all the rest and the wisdom that comes through our particular faceted jewel that we are. So, when I say equanimity, I'm not saying the hell with diversity. You can't have one without the other. It doesn't work that way. You and I are not the same, yet we are the same. Compassion to me is feeling like we're breathing the one breath. It's like we're so connected that there's no separation. On the other hand, I know there's, you know, you're sitting over there, I'm sitting over here. I know that. So appearances, you know, they say in the Buddhist sutras, appearances are like lightning, flash, here a moment and gone the next. They're like a phantom, not real. It's not real. What happens if I pinch you? Ouch. Because of our practice, we're able to step back a little bit, be an observer in our lives, not just an actor. And this observer, it's like that wisdom that I was talking about a few minutes ago. It's not this, it's not that. What is it? Wisdom is there. And that observer watching, seeing how we're dealing with things.
The other thing that was interesting, you were talking about that, Will, was I gather there was one of the patriarchs in China actually was somewhat less than sanguine about meditation as the way, and actually discouraged meditation, at least from the standpoint of its importance to practice as what you do during your day.
Yes.
So I guess there's always been this sort of back and forth about, no, it's not meditation is the thing, it's part of the thing.
Yes. Yes, meditate. But yes, don't become attached to it.
Yeah. And it came about, I was reading these three different masters that they contrast in this text, and it was EQ, of course, the rebel, the iconoclast, and it was Hanakan, who was the strict teacher, and then it was Master Ryoshin, the haiku legend, who was a sort of a naive, almost like a waif, like a young child, you know, throughout his 80 years of writing all these haiku and then living just in the village as a pauper, but always playing with the kids, whatever. And each one of them had a completely different view of things. But each one, in their own way, was evolved Zen master, of course. So, yes, there's always going to be these different aspects, different views, and they're all good.
Yes. Yeah, one of the things that has always been encouraged in Zen is to go around to different teachers. You know, that when I was living at the American Zen College, the monks would come from Korea, and they would travel around the states and go visit different centers. Mm-hmm. And they would come and stay at our place for a while. And every once in a while, they would come over and visit me because I lived in the old farmhouse on the property. And they would see me practicing there and stuff. And they would just come over and knock on the door and speak no English, you know, and just we'd sit down and have a cup of tea. And it was wonderful. You know, you gain something from someone else's perspective. So it's always wonderful to respect that and not judge it. Yeah.
This morning on NPR, there was a segment on a hospital chaplain. And they were saying that what helped him was, he was a Baptist minister, but what helped him was a Buddhist teaching. Of acceptance. Mm-hmm. And that took me aback for a moment because I went to, well, is that Buddhist? and if you extract one thing, you know, I don't know. But on the other hand, you know, if everything's connected and all the parameters are, you know, maybe it is.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have that concept behind it.
Yeah. So that's the thing about concepts, right? And words. They have no substance in themselves. So they could point at something, but they don't really, they don't represent anything in themselves. They're just, they may be pointing at an idea or a concept or wisdom, but you know, it's so tricky because we tend to put things in categories, right? And measure them. And so that's why not everybody can come to the same thing the same way. So what I get from it and what you might get from it could be totally different, or you may not get anything at all. And that's all fine, you know? It's almost like introducing you to another cuisine, another country's type of meal, something that you could feast on if you want to, but it may not be what your palate likes, you know? So it may not be something that you can chew on and get something out of and enjoy. It could be something that tastes kind of bitter, you know, at first. Every time I go back to like this sutra that, you know, I'm so fond of, I learn something else. It's like I get another little morsel, another little taste. And I go, oh, yes. Oh, that's delicious. Give me some more of that. Oh, the sweetness. Oh, that's a little bitter, but it's kind of good medicine. You know? So I think the more open we can be to anything we're doing, right, the more we're going to get out of it in terms of if it's any value to us or not. When we talk about deluded thinking and being ignorant, so much of it for me, it comes down to being able to be a critical thinker. Now, is that Buddhist? In a way it is, isn't it? You know, in the West, one of the wonderful things about the Western mind is the ego. It assumes, it reorganizes thought in a particular way that calls it something that is unique to Western culture, when actually it's something that's been there all along. I mean, yeah, great philosophers come up with what seems like original ideas, but really they're speaking a language that you understand because you understand that language. But another philosopher could be speaking in another language that you don't understand and you're not getting it. But it could be giving the same message, but one you reject and one you accept. Mysticism, you know, I was involved in Sufism for many years, and Sufism is all about finding the one reality in all the diversity. It's a good place to start for me on my spiritual journey, because looking at each religion and seeing that no matter what the philosophy, where it seems to come from, at the root of it, it's the same message. So that's a very interesting idea. I've gained a lot from that. That's helped me to be much more open to different views from coming from different places and not be so quick to judge and try to hear it out and see what it is that's being offered. Again, it's like cuisine, right? This is delicious. Let's taste this one. More worldly experience we have, the better for us. We're so fortunate. One of the good things about the internet, there's so many other things, yike. But unfortunately now it's become a tribal thing, right? We're all just going into our own little pocket of our, and we hang out there with each other. Oh yeah, yeah, and agreeing with everything. Meanwhile, the rest of the world is threatening not to get us. Oh boy.
If we can appreciate what they're trying to give us in terms of the differences between their thinking or their preferences and ours, that gives us common ground and might open them up to our way of looking at things. And now all of a sudden we're getting along and we're able to complement one another rather than see one another as adversaries and feel like we have to fight to protect our piece of turf, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's very powerful. In that it brings us together. And that's a lot harder to do. It takes a lot more work. And that's where the practice helps.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to get into the duality and the judgment and feel like it's threatening because it's different.
Yeah, the wisdom of equanimity. Yeah, so have a wonderful few days. If I see you Wednesday, that's great, right before the new year. This weekend, I'm going to be putting together the retreat for January and putting it out there. Starting the new year, there will be a message about our retreat. I'm looking forward to that very much. I think a one-day retreat in the new year is a good thing. So thank you for coming today. Appreciate it.